ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello, welcome to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, Matt Montaigne shared his soccer journey and the beginning of his coaching career, and how he ended up where he's at today. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is Matt Montaigne. I'm the goalkeeper director and owner of MGK Academy, which stands for Montaigne Goalkeeping Academy. I've been an instructor in the DFW area since 2007, and actually Daniel Dobson gave me my first coaching job. We grew up next door to each other and have known each other for pretty much 40 years, our whole life, and so we just played soccer together, and he kind of got me into the coaching scene when he retired from the MLS and from the Kansas City Wizards, and he kind of got me into the coaching scene. Never thought I would coach soccer, but he wanted to do it, wanted to get started coaching in, started his own club, and just kind of got me in my foot in the door while I was still in college and trying to graduate. So that career kind of took off. And so from 2007 to about 2011, I was coaching with several different clubs, doing private lessons and just kind of jumping from club to club, trying to find a home that fit my goals and my needs. And I ended up getting the assistant job at University of North Texas from 2011 to 2019, where we went on to win 10 championships. We had 5 trips to NCAAs. We've had three Hall of Famers, one All-American, and all 5 years that I was there, my keepers are ranked in the top five category, and then NCAAs and all the goalkeeper categories. So we had a really good run on at UNT, and now I've just kind of started to do my own private training on the side because I've seen a niche where boys and girls side, there's not a lot of knowledge of how to get these kids into the doors in colleges. It's not just all about relationship. There's a fine line there's a formula to it, and I've kind of figured it out. And since 2019, which was my last year at UNT, I've put over, man, I think it's been over 30 kids into college on money. And so I've kind of found a little niche, and I've just kind of been running with it and just helping the parents and the kids navigate that lonely position of the goalkeeper. Man, I've been trained by several people throughout my career, and the ones that I thank the most are actually number one soccer camps. If for people that don't know who that is, they've been around 45 years. It was founded by Dr. Joe Magnick, which is now the FIFA match commissioner. So they go to that segment called Ask Dr. Joe. He's the one that comes in and does the FIFA match officiating for a bad call or a call that we're not sure which way it goes. He is the one that does that. And all those people inside of number one, the Andrulises, the Potiers, all those guys have helped me really, really extend my coaching career just based on their U.S. knowledge of soccer. And they've put me in the right places, the right staff. And now I'm the regional director of number one soccer camps in Texas. And I'm just continuing to learn and grow as we grow. And I've just found a niche, and I really love helping these kids get to the next level.
Awesome. Thank you. So where did you start off? Did you start off playing in the DFW
area? I did. I played, I mean, the big club, I guess I would have played for would have been Longhorns. I played on the Longhorns who was my coach? I don't remember. But yeah, I played with the Longhorns back when we used to host the Dallas Cup. That was like the bigger club that I played for. I played for a lot of, you know, mid-level clubs throughout, but that was the big club that I played for when I was growing up, was the Longhorns. From there, ended up I played in the Czech Republic for a while. Between when I was 17 to 18, I went overseas on like one of those like little trips you go try out for. I don't even remember what they're called, but you go try out, they take you overseas, and I did really well. And they just kind of kept an eye on me, got to kind of extend my career there a little bit, and then came back and ended up playing at Richland College for a while. And then I transferred into Midwestern. And when I transferred into Midwestern, I went in for dental hygiene. And that's the only major at Midwestern you can't play soccer and do was dental hygiene. And having a kid early at 18, I knew I needed to get in and get out. But I was blessed enough to be able to work alongside some of their female goalkeepers and really took my coaching job there to the next level.
That's impressive. Did you played for Richland as a goalie? Did he find it enjoyable playing for Richland, or was it wanted to play soccer at college and this is the one that gave you an opportunity and you took it, or do you have many offers?
Yeah. No, so coming out of high school, I did have some offers, but like I said, I had a kid really early and I wanted to stay home and be present in his and his mom's life. And so I basically took a year off, and then I decided, man, I really want to get back to playing soccer. So I reached out to the coach, and I actually went for an open tryout, and there was probably five goalkeepers there, and I was the only one that got through the mix to actually walk on and play there. And so, I started from the bottom and had to work. So, yeah, it was enjoyable. Practices were early in the mornings for goalkeepers, and then we rolled over. I think my practice was like 6 to 7, which we had to be there at 5:30 to stretch, maybe 6, and then 7 to 8, you know, 8:30 was team practice, which we rolled over into, and then I went straight to school. And then, you know, took my classes and then came back for either a training session or a weight session. And then it was done for the day. So it was pretty strenuous with a kid, but I had a lot of support system, my parents, my family, my friends. They're all willing to chip in and help watch my son while I was at practice. So I was actually fairly lucky.
Very fortunate. That's awesome, though. Then you went to Western and you stopped, but you started to pick up coaching. Is this when you realized you liked coaching then?
Yeah. So I had a friend of mine that was about my same age. She was at Midwestern and her name was Elia Dwyer, and she wasn't too happy with her goalkeeper coach. And so she kind of reached out to me. I was like, Matt, you know, can you help me? Yeah, I've talked to the head coach. He's given me permission to train with you. You know, they kind of know who you are. And, you know, I still had connections to that soccer community there. I had a lot of friends that were there. And so they knew I just wasn't a random person, you know, and they kind of knew who I was. I had played for their head coach's brother and for the Longhorns. Our guest played several times and was on, you know, in that club that there was some connections. So they gave me the stamp and they made a phone call, if I recall properly. Obviously, that was years ago. And basically, I started training Ellie, and that's when I really picked up the love for goalkeeping, like coaching. I really never thought, one, I'd like to coach girls, and two, I didn't even know if I was going to want to coach, because I was just went through so much as a kid playing goalkeeper, and I was a shorter goalkeeper at 5'8", so I always had to compete, but I was really athletic, had a good vertical, and it was just hard. It was hard, but I made it, and I just wasn't sure if I wanted to be a coach, because I didn't want to have that effect on goalkeepers that my coaches had on me in the long run. Obviously, I had good ones in between, but the bad ones were more, and it kind of took a toll on me. But yeah, at Midwestern was where I really fell in love with actually coaching soccer.
So did you end up going into dental high?
I did.
Dental field?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Today I work with a buddy of mine. He's the dentist. We opened an office in 2016. He played football at the University of Oklahoma, and we've been working together for over 10 years now, but we have our own office. It's called D Dental, and we're right here in the colony. And so I graduated from Midwestern with a Bachelor's of Science of Dental Hygiene. Yes, sir.
And then when you graduated, did you still coach, or did you work more focus on your 9-to-5, or did get into it?
Yeah, so kind of cool thing with like dental hygiene is there, you can temp, kind of like nurses, right? There's a need for, like, when a nurse goes down or sick, you can temp. So there's agencies that basically you call them up, you go through the interview process, and then they say, okay, well, what days are you available? And you tell them. So it was kind of crazy. I was the first class to ever take our dental boards online. And so there was a lot of issues going on. So it took a little bit longer to get our grades back because there were a lot of complaints, at least in the class that I took it with at that facility. And so it took a lot longer to get our grades back. And it was kind of random. I, you know, had maybe sent out some emails or had some coaches, like, you know, reaching out for me. And I got a random call from the coach at UNT. And at this point in time, I had no job because I had just graduated. I mean, I might've been out 2 weeks, and John Headland over at UNT gave me a call. I came in for an interview, and I got a D1 coaching job right out of the gate of actually graduating college. So all that work I kind of put in coaching in between, it kind of paid off, and I got lucky and it fell on my lap. And so I went on there, started coaching there. And then once I got my grades back, I just chose the days that we didn't have practice on to work. So I actually did both, and I've been doing both since then. I still do. So I work basically 5-hour days in hygiene. I do an alternating schedule. So we work Monday, Wednesday mornings and Monday, Wednesday afternoons, and then Tuesday, Thursday mornings. And then I coach in the downtimes of those days.
A long day. That's going to be long days for you.
It can. Yeah. It turns into a normal day, you know, obviously, but it gets me out of the chair, and it gives me time to take a lot of these kids on their, you know, college ID visits and introduce them to the coaching staff. And there is a formula to it. And obviously, you know, it takes the kid to want to drive themselves, but it gives me the opportunities to travel with these kids when they get to that age where they are looking at colleges.
That's really cool and impressive. So this brought you to UNT. So as I learned that most assistant roles are not paid in coaching at any level and any sport, as I've done more and more reading. So you worked there for, 8 years? I'm not remember, 9 years.
Yep. With 20, same 20, time. 20, same as Daniel. Yep.
Same as Daniel. And then you were there. So you learned the ins and outs of the collegiate world. And through that process, you've created your own formula, and I don't need the details for that. That's your magic. That's your allows you to do what you do. And I don't need the details for that, but that taught you how to get kids ready for the next step. So this brought you to you creating your own academy then after you finished with the assistant coaching role, correct? Or were
Yes,
you
sir.
already having this, already
No.
having a side gig with the academy?
No. So obviously when you're coaching D1, you can't coach like high school. Like if I'm coaching a female sport, I can't coach female goalkeepers from freshman to senior year because they're actually considered recruitable. Now I could do boy side, but I couldn't do the girl side. But if they were younger, I could, and I had to be within a certain mileage and distance and all that. So I worked for a club. I still work for that same club. Celtic soccer club up in Denton. And so I just kept, yeah, I just kind of kept plugging away and working. And you know, as I got more down the road to seeing really what drove me and the passion that drove me for the goalkeeper side of it was just kind of slowly starting to develop my own goalkeeper union is what we call it, and really helping these kids understand that it's okay to compete with one another. You can train with one another because at the end of the day, you guys are the ones that are going to always have each other's backs because you're the only ones on the field that know how each one of you feels when you get scored on, when you make a big save, when the coach yells at you, when the coach tells you you're not good enough, or when you just don't think you played well. And it's been great to me to see all these keepers walk up to each other at the end of games, give each other high fives, hugs, check on them. Had one girl go down, got hurt. Opposing goalkeeper was somebody she trained with. She was the first person over there, even beat the coach to check on her. So we're just trying to build that unity of goalkeepers and goalkeeper life and to help one another because we've all been through it. We know it's a hard position and it does take a union. And the only people that really understand are your parents and another goalkeeper.
My son does not play goalkeeper. We advise him to stay out of goalkeeping. It's not because it's not because he doesn't have the mentality for it. He's just short and not good at
Yeah,
it.
it happens. I was a short goalkeeper. I had to work hard. I played with, you know, I was probably one of the shorter of all my friends, you know, Coach Daniel and all those guys. I grew up with them next door to them. And I mean, they're all 6 foot and taller, 6'1". And I honestly think that's kind of what propelled me to be able to play with those guys. It was, hey, I'm playing with these kids in the backyard every day and I could compete. They'd beat me up. They'd push me. You know, they physically wouldn't beat me up, but they just rough me up, you know, because I was a
Right.
smaller guy and it just kind of made me a little bit stronger in the box, a little bit more aggressive, a little kind of have that pit bull mentality is what I call it. And the older I got, it just kind of grew on me and I just always had to battle. And it's definitely a hard position. It's a rough position. Obviously, you know, the modern day goalkeeper has changed a little bit from when I used to play, but it's still at the end of the day, the most brutal position to me on the field.
When we remind my son, if a goal happens, it happens because 10 other people failed to do their job.
100%.
And I go, and we say that the goalie's the last resort and he can't do it all by himself. And in the last, what we watched FC Dallas play the other week, and Paul Areola scored a goal because he was trying to flick the ball back. Instead of hitting his foot, it hit his shin because he was pushed from behind. And there's nothing the goalie could have done. And I go, look, it happens at every level. Even from his own teammate, it happens. And it is what it is. I go, you have to be there to be supportive and pick up your goalkeeper. If the goal happens, that means you all failed. And
Absolutely.
it's
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's hard, I think, at the youth age for coaches to understand that because, I mean, especially now with all the pressure with MLS Next and ECNL, and I mean, those coaches are pressured to win. And so they're looking for the next best thing, you know, in the goalkeeper role, which they know it wins and loses games. But a lot of the coaches don't understand how to get the best out of that goalkeeper unless they've played that position. And that's just my understanding. And that's why goalkeepers always look for different types of training because they just don't get it in training. And that's what I hear all the time. The coaches don't understand how to talk to them or they don't know how to build them up when they get broke down. I mean, it's a cycle. And a lot of times, goalkeeping to me is 90% mental, and the rest you piece together, you know? And so
right.
the physical portion, the tactical, the technical, the ability, but it's 90% mental. You know, you have to be strong, you have to be thick-skinned, and you know, a 10-year-old is not going to have as thick skin as a 20-year-old. And so, what ends up happening is these kids either get worn out, broke down, or just don't even want to play the sport anymore. And they were really good at it. And so, I think it's just a hard position to play, but there's not a lot of knowledge on it unless you've played it.
That being said, so my son is 9. I can only come from a young example because my oldest is 9. So we have a couple of kids that play goalie, and it's like, I don't care. I've been much better about it now than I was when I was younger as a parent. My kid was younger and I was younger. You're only talking maybe 2 years. But even when the other goalie makes a save, my wife and I still clap because we realizing like they need as much encouragement. It doesn't matter what side, who's cheering them on. It's a nice save or nice, even if it's a nice shot from our player, it's all great shot, but goalie, good job, good save. And I didn't realize we started to do it until this season. It's like, it's just a natural thing that our family does. And I think because we have made such an emphasis on our son that if a goalie makes a save, it's the hardest thing. My wife says she has the most sympathy for a goalie because when there's a PK going on, I feel like it's almost like 90% chance it's going in. And they save it. It's amazing to watch. And the kid lights up. It doesn't matter what team saves it. It's like, sucks for our kid if they miss the goal, but great job for the goalie. Absolutely. And I think parents need to have that mentality on the sideline, is even if it's the opposing team, because if they can just hear the opposing team cheering them on, it will make the game more fun.
Oh, 100%. I mean, there needs to be honestly more of you on the sidelines. I mean, it's a very, very lonely position sometimes. And, I can tell you from personal experience, if I played good, everybody invited me to their house afterwards, right? Everybody wanted to hang out with me. Everybody, hey, we're going to lunch, we're going to dinner, whatever. You want to come spend the night? Yeah, great, cool. If I let in a goal that they didn't like, it was crickets. I was riding home with my parents and nobody wanted to hang out with me. Yeah, that was the brutal truth. Nobody on my team wanted to hang out with me. I had to go home and hang out with my football buddies or my baseball buddies or whoever else, right? But nobody on my team wanted to do anything with me. They were so mad if they thought I gave it up. And it might have been a worldie, or it hits your top hand, you try to push it over and it goes in the back of the net. Unlucky, right? Nope, goalkeeper's fault. So all that at a young age, let's just say the keeper starts playing at 10 to 18, he has felt all of that. And it hasn't even begun yet if they want to go to college. And so there's already this persona of, if the keeper messes up, it's always his fault. Now, we obviously know that good coaches understand that it's not. And if you make an easy mistake, hey, it's a coachable mistake, right? I mean, failure is the first opportunity to learn, especially in goalkeeping. My goalkeeper coach used to always say, just don't make the same mistake twice, right? Learn from it, move on. Don't ever give up that goal again, because it's hard to give up the same goal because there's so many moving parts in soccer, right? There's different ways to give up the goal. He's like, just don't ever give up that goal again. And I feel like, too, that's why all these goalkeepers can play into their 40s at the English Premier League level. They're not better than what they were at in their 20s. They've just seen it enough. They've learned from the goals they've given up. They've learned from their defensive mistakes, and now they're communicating better. The Petrčeks, the Casillases, all those guys played into their 40s. Right. And it's because they didn't get better than in their 20s. I guarantee you they don't move as well as they did in their 20s, right? But they got smarter. They put themselves in situations. They used their mouth. They communicated. They told the defense and the midfield where they wanted them. And then when they had to come up with a big save, well, they're only having to cover half the goal. They're not covering the whole goal or guessing where that ball's going. They knew where it was going. They had the windows. They put their defense in front of them, and they stood there, and they had to make a save. And I feel like that's why those goalkeepers got so good in their 40s, was because they had seen it all. They've made the mistakes. They knew the mistakes, and they just never let them happen again. Because otherwise – you know as well as I do, it's hard to play into your 40s in any sport. And those guys are playing at the top level, right? 42, yes. 43, 40. I want to even say Petrček was even maybe closer to 45.
So that's impressive. I mean, at any level of soccer.
Yeah, so it's just crazy to me. And I feel like it's because they just got better.
Now, with that, do you think it is more of technology changes so they're able to study film more, or is it because they're learning from their mistakes? Because they, I will say it once, because there is film so they can go back and watch what they're doing and seeing what the mistakes they're making, or is it because coaching has gotten so much better and it's more of it for them to have?
I think all the above. I think being able to get immediate feedback from video is great, because you might think you're in the right place, the right time, but then you see it in the video and in goalkeeping, a half a step is a big step, right? So, yeah. I mean, if you're a half a step wrong, that could be the difference between a goal and a save. So definitely having the feedback of video has changed the game. I mean, the modern day game is great. When Daniel and I were at UNT, I mean, we studied so much video, we knew we were right. Like when we went into those rooms, we knew what formation the other team was playing. We knew what they liked to do on set pieces. We knew what they liked to do on corners. And there was no doubt in our mind, we knew exactly what we were going to see that weekend unless they changed it to see to something else. And, you know, most of the time they didn't. So we knew how to defend. We knew how to attack. We knew their tendencies. We knew their weaknesses. So as a goalkeeper that's played a long time at an elite level and had elite level coaching, that is huge knowledge because they can take that knowledge and immediately apply it. And it's a game changer. But also they're learning, right? They're always evolving. You know, you always hear this, oh, the modern day goalkeeper. Well, the modern day goalkeeper is can play with their feet. They have video. You still have the old goalkeeper techniques. It's just now modernized. It's made it so much easier to understand what you're doing, how you're doing, and get immediate feedback. And you take their knowledge from playing for however many years, and oh my gosh, it's a recipe for success, in my opinion. I mean, we try to utilize video as much as possible because a lot of kids are visual learners. Some are visual, some are physical. Some you have to walk them through the steps. So I definitely think all the above helps these goalkeepers to be able to play longer and to have more success, successful careers at whether that's they're trying to make their high school team, whether that's going to college or just playing on a U10 team that they're trying to start and play every minute if they can. I definitely think it helps for sure.
That being said, now goalkeeping is, I feel like it's one of the few pigeonholes kids get from a young age. Like if they like it, they get stuck there. Now, do you advise parents to tell their kids like, no, they need to have at least half the game to go play the field so they can work on their foot skills and understand defense and offense and the attack and pressure and all that fun stuff also, so they understand what the players are doing on the field. So they're being pigeonholed because they're playing half the game, but at the other half of the game, do you feel like parents should advise their players and go and have their player approach the coach? So I'm like, hey, I know that I'm the goalie, but can we have our second goalie go in for half and I play the field for part of it so I have a better understanding of the field play? Or goalies tend not to do many Matthews and scissors and
exactly
fancy ball work, but yeah. I know as a for the short stint that I did coach, I never had a goalie because I only coached in 4v4. But when I was going through my grassroots coaching and getting ready for, I was almost getting my D license, as I was studying more, I realized like the goalie needs to have just as much foot technical ability and understanding of more than just punting the ball in a standstill or being able to have a precise pass every time they pass, and not just a, I call it a wonky pass to the wide or a weak pass that doesn't have enough pep behind it to push it forward. Do you think it's critical for parents? I'm sorry this has taken so long to get out. Is it? Do you think parents should be advocating for their kids and the players should be advocating for field time?
Yeah, so goalkeeping. Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to, I mean, yes and no. I'll probably get roasted when I say no, but I'll get there later and I'll give you my reasons. The ultimate goal to me would be yes, because the modern day goalkeeper has to be able to play with their feet, correct? I mean, every coach wants the kid to be able to get the ball passed back to them. They need to learn how to distribute and all the ways to distribute, throwing, side volley, side winders, punts, drop kicks, you know, the whole nine yards. So being on the field not only increases their awareness of their feet, it also teaches them how to play a game at that position and what it takes when they're back there calling the plays. You know, the goalkeeper is the quarterback of football, right? They're the first line of offense, then the last line of defense. So they see everything. And for a keeper that probably hasn't played on the field at a young age, doesn't understand how to play that position, how do you expect him to be able to coach it unless he's just had that good of coaching from the time he was 10 to however old he is now, right? It just doesn't happen. Now, can it? Absolutely. But I think for sure that these kids should be half field, half goalkeeper till about the age of 12. Because at 12, what I have noticed, just at least here in the DFW area and in the United States, is once you hit about 12, it starts to change a little bit because these keepers that may have played on the field their entire or in goal at 10 to 11 to 12, they're a little behind in the goalkeeping situation to maybe a kid that has played goalkeeper 10, but their foot skills are a little low, right? So about that 12-year-old mark, I feel like you need to start picking, okay, hey, are you going to play goalkeeper or are you going to play on the field? Now, you can have the Hope Solos of the world. I have a goalkeeper. She plays in Nebraska right now. She played on the field to her sophomore year. She ended up having a lot of offers. She had 15 D1 ride offers, right? Because a lot of it was because of her feet, because she played on the field. But she had some goalkeeper knowledge, and she just decided at her sophomore year, hey, I want to be a goalkeeper. And she put in countless hours of work, though, to be able to catch up and to be able to play at that level. And she's like, man, this just the speed of the game is so different. She didn't realize how fast that game was back there at that pace and at that level. And so I think about 12, you need to start kind of figuring out where you need to be. But that U6, U8, U10, U11, yeah, I mean, I think you need to be on the field as much as possible, utilizing foot skills, just so you know how to use your feet, right foot, left foot, control the ball, pass the ball. The problem I'm seeing now is a lot of young kids, they're pretty good at goalkeeper at that age. And so these coaches are sticking them in goal, and they're almost, what's the word I'm looking for? Specializing too early. And so they get stuck in this position, and then I get them at 12, and I'm like, what have you been doing with your feet? Like, you can't even control a ball. Like, what part of the ball do you pass with? A foot do you pass with? What part do you strike it with? How do you hit a corner kick versus a goal kick? There's a lot of different innuendos, and if they don't even know how to strike a ball, I can't teach them how to even distribute the ball at a high level with their feet. So it becomes a problem. So yeah, I mean, long answer to a short question is, should they be on a field at the young age of bloody time? Absolutely. And then I think once they get to about that 12 to 14-year-old mark, they really need to start figuring out where they want to be. The good thing with field players, there's a forward, there's midfielders, and there's defense. There's a lot of options, and those can change. I mean, we took forwards and made them defenders in college, and defenders and made them forwards in college. And so I think if you're on the field, you have a greater opportunity to move around in positions. But at the goalkeeper role, especially with a modern day goalkeeper, you got to be able to do everything. So if you have a U6 to U12 kid and you're not splitting time, or you're not getting extra skills outside of there, yeah, you need to be splitting time and being on the field for sure.
So how would you advise a parent to advocate for their child or a player to advocate for it then?
You
And
know,
then
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
that's a hard one. I mean, as a parent, because you see these players just get thrown in goal, and then, or in my son's case, they have one kid that thinks he wants to play goalie, and that's where he plays for half the game. Then they look for a volunteer if certain players aren't there for the second half of the game. And how do you advise parents to advocate for their kids?
Yeah, so I mean, I think if you're at the club level, right? If we're speaking strictly from a club team, correct? I think you need to go in, like when you make the team, and say, hey, look, my kid's 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old. We're really keen on him developing not only goalkeeper skills, but foot skills. And, if we're up in games or down in games, we really like him to be on the field. We understand if it's a close game, he's staying or she's staying in the goal, right? But if we are absolutely winning by a lot or losing by a lot, we need to make that change, because it's not going to affect the team if you're winning or losing by that much. And here's the great thing about select soccer: you can always get that goalkeeper back in goal. It's not college where, you pull them in the second half, they're gone, they're out. So it's not pros where you only have limited subs. I mean, there's a lot that moves in youth soccer, especially in the United States. And I think as a parent, you just got to stick up for your kid. And if that coach isn't willing to do that at signing day, well, then you need to find another team. Now, if you really like that team, that's a great team. You want your kid playing on the top team, or that he's the best at, and or he's, excelling the most at, not necessarily the best on the top team, but he's getting some playing time, and he's going to get challenges there, or she's going to get challenges, and you just want to build some extra foot skills. I mean, there's always, private sessions with skill trainers. Hey, if they're young at that age, put them in rec soccer on the field. Just tell them they're not going to play goalkeeper. Throw them on a recreational team. Or you take a step back, where winning and losing isn't such a big deal to a club coach. Instead of playing at the mid-level or high level, take a step back and play on a lesser team and get some experience, because you're not going to sign a pro contract at 12 years old with any pro team or college team. you know, it's, that's going to happen later in life. So, I mean, you're just trying to develop the most of the, you got to get the most development you can from the time you start playing till the time you decide whether you want to keep going further or you want to hang up your boots. And I think skills and game time on field in the goal, I mean, I think it's great for all the kids. Absolutely. But from, as a goalkeeper parent, you got to advocate for your kid, and if the coach isn't willing to give you a response that you're okay with, then you're not on the right team. You need to make an adjustment, whether that's going higher or lower or staying where you're at and playing recreational or indoor, right? I mean, indoor, there's a lot of indoor teams, futsal leagues, right? Put the kids in futsal and just tell them, I'm not a goalkeeper, I'm on the field. It doesn't matter if they're great with their feet, because they're probably not going to be. You know, most of them aren't, but there are some really good kids that are goalkeepers that can play with their feet. And a lot of it is because they play futsal or they play on the field in leagues that aren't associated with club team.
Hello. Thank you guys for listening this week. As we wrap it up, I know it was abruptly ended and I cut it short purposely. I feel like we covered a lot of information this week. As I reflected more and more as I've listened to this episode, I realized that there's two messages that he gave. One was never give up. Like, he never gave up on his dream. And two, it's the message I feel like all these players that have been successful have given is, they're grateful for the journey they have been on. They have found the positive, even within negative things that have been thrown their way. Or speed bumps along their way. Not always negative, just life choices or life lessons that had to be learned at some point. And if you listen to what he talks about and how grateful he is, you'll realize that this is the message that a lot of these players have. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode as much as I did recording it. I feel like Matt has been wonderful, and until next week, when you guys hear more from Matt, until next time, see you at the pitch.